Okay. We are here on the banks of the Nile River, on the west bank across the river from Aswan in Egypt on the Sacred Journeys Tour. And we have several of the participants, including Dr. Aaron Nell, one of the leaders, an astroarchaeologist and really cool person. And we're going to do an invitation for contact meditation. You can use this as a template for your own groups. I encourage you to go out in the field with friends and practice. So we're going to start with a little bit of history, since most of you here and most in the audience have not done this before. So let's start with a statement of purpose here. We're not expecting necessarily an in-your-face appearance of a physical craft with hotel and stuff just down the road, but that might freak out the neighbors, but then again, there's always a chance they can come in relatively undetected. What this is more about is raising our consciousness to a higher vibration of unconditional love and oneness, and spending some time communing with our neighbors from the higher dimensions, be they our star cousins or from the spiritual or angelic realms. It's about tuning ourselves up enough that we can perceive their presence around us. It's about meeting them halfway. We're going to talk just briefly about the history of extraterrestrial contact events. We've talked about about possible histories of humanity. We'll talk about the nature of consciousness and where we can go with it. And we'll talk briefly about protection and what holds us back. Talk about how to prepare ourselves for a contact event so that we're able to handle it and allow it to proceed as far as possible with confidence and courage. Ricardo Gonzalez, who's been having successful contact events for some time, said there were three important points or considerations that applied here in determining the nature of the contact events or experiences he's been involved with. One, the intention has to match. Positive intentions attract positively inclined ETs. Vibration and frequency has to match. Generally, this involves human participants raising their consciousness to a level that is compatible with the extraterrestrials or star cousins. And there has to be an invitation. Briefly, we'll talk about how they travel and do they even need a craft. And will we? For instance, most of you are familiar with Sai Baba, and I don't know if you've heard the stories about how he could bilocate or trilocate, and he'd be giving presentations in two or three different locations simultaneously. With our consciousness, creating our own personal Merkaba, Drumvloma Kizadek is good on that. You can create your own spacecraft and travel in consciousness. With technology, they've got things called jump rooms in the covert projects. It looks like an elevator. You step in, push the button, the door opens, and you're somewhere else, on the moon or Mars or something. And, brief history of the contact attempts. Back in 1953, there was the International Flying Saucer Bureau. In 1953, they initiated World Contact Day on March 15, 1953. There's an interesting book called The Flying Saucer Reader by Jay David that talks about some of that. Back at that time, what they did was they mimeographed a letter and mailed it, physical mail, to their members all around the world. And they said, on this date, March 15th, everybody meditate on the concepts in this letter, and thought projected out to the universe, asking for contact. In 1977, the Carpenters performed a song called Calling Occupants of Interplanetary Craft. A little out of character for the Carpenters, but it really moves you to the core, and it became the anthem, the official anthem of World Contact Day, which still goes on every March 15th. There were contacts at Giant Rock and other places. In fact, contact may have been going on for the entire history of mankind. Many, many theories abound. Are we colonists from other worlds? The Native Americans talk about the four races of man, and a lot of their symbols will have the white, the black, the red, and the yellow, symbolizing the four races of man. Are we genetically engineered by other species? Or was it possibly just shore leave, upgrading the DNA of the indigenous hominoids? There's a theory called panspermia, which means that the building blocks of life, RNA and DNA, they found them in meteors and asteroids. And those rain down on planets all over the place. And wherever there's sufficient suitable conditions, life can take hold. We found on this planet life in a wide variety of range of environments. They call them extremophiles. There's the bacteria that grow in the boiling hot geysers in Yellowstone. There's the volcanic vents on the bottom of the ocean where there's no light at all, no photosynthesis, but there's a thriving ecosystem. They work off the heat of the volcanic vents and the minerals. And it's a chemosynthesis life cycle, but there's tube worms and crab-like things and all kinds. It's just a thriving ecosystem that operates on an entirely different system than our life cycle. They found bacteria living in Columbia River basalt 5 kilometers below the surface, just tunneling through the minerals, digesting the minerals, and leaving little tunnels behind. They found those same kind of tunnels on a meteorite from Mars, and it threw people into all kinds of controversy about, does this mean there's life on Mars, and what are the implications of that? There's photon transmission. David Wilcock, in his book, The Source Field Investigations, talks about how they can shine a coherent light beam through the embryo of an egg, say a duck egg, and into the freshly fertilized egg of a chicken. And on the photons, apparently, the DNA codes are transmitted. And what they get is, when it hatches, this chicken has some of the attributes of a duck. They're transferred on the photons. So it's possible that the photons coming in from the stars are carrying the blueprint for life. And all it needs is the raw materials, and it manifests out into physical. Are we thus created in God's own image in one manner or another? How much galactic heritage do we have within us? Probably a lot more than we think. Is it possible at some very fundamental levels we are one with all that we might meet? This could be on a DNA level, it could be on a consciousness level. Are we all sparked by the same seed of consciousness, by the same creator or creative source? So with all that in common, what keeps us from having regular contact already? The lower vibrations of fear, hate, and ego are manipulated very skillfully by the ruling elite to prevent us from having contact and learning the greater truths, because these truths would set us free from their dominations. Fear shuts down higher level contact instantly, so fear is promoted by those who want to control us. Recognize when fear is being used to manipulate you, reject it when you see it being used. With all of our preconditioning, how do we prepare ourselves for contact with our star cousins? We need to shift ourselves up to a higher level of thinking where we are at one with the universe and are beyond fear, knowing that we are safe and ready to meet our galactic neighbors halfway. I found that when I'm radiating a light of unconditional love and oneness with all, then nothing less can enter my space. However, for those who are less practiced, let us erect a dome of protection over our site, which will only allow those of the highest good to enter. We'll do this during our meditation very shortly. Our culture uses our brain as our primary information storage and recall device. However, it was meant primarily to be as a backup system like a backup hard drive for your computer, backup to our true connection with the infinite mind, where everything is a knowing rather than a remembering. Our brain is really much more like a radio transmitter than it is like a computer, radio transmitter and receiver. In order to start to reconnect with source, we'll also work on an exercise to move our consciousness from our heart, from our head, to our heart whenever we want. International travel, games like the Olympics, etc., that bring people together from all over the world, are a great opportunity for people to learn that others around the world are much more like them than they are different. Once we learn how much alike we are, then we can start to cherish the differences for what we can learn from them. There's a concept called Ubuntu, which means community. It comes from one of the African tribes, and I wish I could remember which one. But basically it means working together in community for the common good. And one way this is best illustrated was an anthropologist was studying this one of these tribes, and she put a basket of fruit down by a tree, and then she told the kids, "You guys race down there, and whoever gets there first can have the basket of fruit." And the kids looked at each other kind of puzzled, and they just went arm in arm and walked down there together and shared the fruit. And the anthropologist said, "Well, you know, why didn't you run down here? You could have had it all." And the answer was, "How could I be happy when my friends are hungry?" So they have a much better sense of oneness than what the cutthroat business world of mainstream society has. We'll talk a little bit about creative manifestation. Our thoughts manifest, whether we realize it or not. And as our whole planet, as well as our consciousness, moves to a higher level of vibration, our thoughts manifest much more rapidly. So be careful what you think. You will manifest what you're thinking much more rapidly than ever in the past. You want to focus on what you want to create, not on what you fear, because you will manifest what you fear. Don't fear the future, or you'll create that future. The universe does not understand the qualifiers. If you have a concept like the war on terrorism, the universe doesn't understand on. It just hears the words war and terrorism, or the concepts. It says, "I don't know why, but that's what they're asking for, so I'll manifest it for them." Instead, it should be a campaign for peace. Mother Teresa understood this. She was asked to march in an anti-war parade, and she refused, which puzzled a lot of people. And they asked, "Why would you not wish to participate in such a worthy cause?" And her response was, "When you give a march for peace, I'll lead it." It's just a subtle but extremely important distinction. Okay, also understand that our thoughts are totally transparent to those in the higher dimensions who are fully conscious and telepathic. I've experienced this. Sierra is one person who can read your thoughts. If your thoughts are different than what you're speaking, she knows instantly. Emre, who's also on our radio network, is that way. And Natasha. Natasha is an Octurian. She was not born on this planet. When I first met her, she would wait for me to ask the question before she'd answer so she wouldn't weird me out. But as I got to know her better, I'll just think a concept, and before I even get it formed into words in my head, let alone out of my mouth, she answers like I've already asked the question. It just slows her down to wait for me to talk. And that's the way we're all going to be soon. So get used to it. Total honesty is absolutely necessary. And the sooner you start practicing that, the easier the transition is going to be. Also, since your thoughts manifest rapidly, it's important to become disciplined in your thinking, not only what you say, but what you think, so that you don't create any unpleasant surprises of your own making. So what limits contact? We do. Our thoughts, our fears, our conditioning, the movies we've seen, that lingering doubt, that's what limits contact. Know that we're perfectly safe. Natasha says that the vast majority of the negative ETs have been removed or contained. They've given us a level playing field. Anybody we're likely to meet is going to be benevolent. And especially if we are operating in the higher dimensions, in the higher consciousness, nothing less can enter our space. What matters most is not where we are physically, but where we are mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. So ask yourself, are you ready for contact? Go deep within and ponder that question. Now you might wonder, why are they here? Why so much interest in us? They're observing, doing the Jane Goodall thing. Some of them are living among us, giving us a little nudge now and then to kind of move us along the right path. Trying to keep us from blowing ourselves back into the Stone Age again. Apparently it's happened several times on this planet. These Star Brothers and Sisters and Celestials are here for many reasons. One of them being that they're very interested in our ascension process. This is apparently a grand experiment in the galaxy. Apparently it's never been done to ascend to the fifth dimension and retain your physical bodies. You've always transitioned to an energetic body, shed the physical body. This is the first time it's been tried. They're very confident it's going to work, but it's up to us, in large measure, to get it right. We're galactic center stage right now. These star people are here for the best interest of humanity and our planet. They're trying to repair our environment and mitigate the hazards of our environmental disasters, like Fukushima. They could do much more if we invited them to work openly and to help if we allowed them to work openly rather than having to work remotely. Someday soon, that will be safe for them to do. It's my understanding that most, if not all, of the less ethical ETs have been kicked off the planet already. That, combined with our protection and the assistance of the benevolent beings present already, will assure a safe encounter for all if that happens tonight. So the main thing left concerning contact experiences are the physiological effects. It's normal to be excited, especially if we have a good sighting of a craft or if we have someone appear within our circle. Just keep it from going into fear. And one of the best ways to keep from going into fear is a breathing meditation. Focus on your breath. Breathing meditation can help center and calm us in new situations, especially those situations that involve high strangeness. The more you encounter high strangeness, the more you look forward to it for what you can learn from it. But the first few times it can be a bit disorienting. Breathe. Focus on your breath and center, and you'll be fine. If it's happening too fast for you, ask them for a little space and time to get yourself together. They'll respect that. They've come all this way to meet with us. They'll give you a little time to get your wits together. It seems like they only come as close as the least psychologically prepared person is comfortable with. They don't want to even cause any psychological distress. So just center, work on yourself, and when you're ready, invite them to come closer, whether that's in a craft or a physical being. So, let's put all this into practice. Let's start with a breathing meditation. And we'll do what some people call square breathing. We'll inhale slowly and deeply. And pause as long as it's comfortable. And then exhale slowly and deeply. And pause. Again, as long as it's comfortable. Each of these four sections of the breath should be approximately equal length. So slow, deep inhale. And pause. Slow, deep exhale, pushing all of the breath out. And pause. Inhale. And pause. And do this cycle 7 times. And start to notice that in the pause between the breaths, there's a moment of deep, profound silence. Go into that silence. And with each breath, expand it a little longer and a little longer. Until eventually, with practice, you can stay in that silence between the breaths through the entire breath cycle. That silence is your connection with the cosmic consciousness. And now, while we're in this relaxed state, visualize a dome, or actually a sphere, around us. Large enough to encircle all of us. And visualize the outside coating being reflective. I visualize it like millions of tiny corner reflectors, which, like a light reflector, will reflect anything back directly the direction it came from. So if anyone's trying to mess with us psychotronically, it just directs it back exactly where it came from, creates a feedback loop, and fries their machine. Call that karma. I don't even like to think of protection from anything, because protection implies something that you need to be afraid of. And we don't really need to be afraid of anything. We just set this dome up. And with our intention, create it so that only those of the highest good for humanity and the planet and our highest good can come in. And that's all we need to do. And now, become aware of awareness itself. Not the sounds that you hear, but that by which you are able to hear. Contemplate how it is that you are able to perceive, to hear, to see, to smell. What is it that allows you to be conscious and to perceive? And when you hear a sound, don't try and push it away, but just take it as confirmation of your ability to perceive. And then move back to contemplating how it is that you do perceive. And now, imagine yourself like a dolphin swimming in a sea, a vast sea of consciousness, pure consciousness. And you're able to swim with the greatest of ease, jumping and spinning and looping like a dolphin, just for the pure joy of it. Just get into the feeling of that total free, unlimited joy. No restrictions at all. And now dive deep, deep within that sea of pure consciousness, as deep as you can go. Turn upward, swim as fast as you can, leap into the air and just keep going up through the atmosphere, past the moon, out past the planets, past the stars, and out beyond our galaxy into intergalactic space. See the galaxies going by. And coast to a stop out in intergalactic space between the galaxies. Look around and just drink in the beauty of it all. Contemplate what a beautiful universe God has created. Just spend some time in that deep, profound silence. That's your connection with the cosmic consciousness, with the Akashic records. And in this space, we're beyond fear, at one with the universe, and able to ask any question we wish to find the answers for. So think of some great question you've been wondering, contemplating for years, and put it out there to the cosmic consciousness. Something deep and profound, like what is the meaning of life? And then over the next several days, just be alert for signs, intuitions, any feedback you might get in subtle and yet profound ways. Now focus on your pineal gland. It's in the center of your head, between the temples, behind the third eye. Just mentally go to that point and tickle it a little bit. Visualize you've got a feather and you're going around dusting the inside of your pineal, removing the accumulated calcified materials and tuning it up. By just focusing your attention on the pineal gland, you can help activate it and improve your psychic abilities. Your pineal gland is also your spaceship. It allows you to travel in consciousness. It also allows you to travel out of body or remote view. Let's do some gentle ohms to get the consciousness of the group synchronized. Allow those vibrations to activate and clean the pineal. Experience that great silent cosmic consciousness and now move your consciousness from your head about 16 to 18 inches down to your heart. Your heart is the seat of emotions, and it has its own consciousness, very much like the brain. start to see others through the heart connection. And understand that no matter who they are or where they're from, they are awake and aware and conscious, sparked by the same seed of consciousness as you, by the same Creator. And in that way, we are all very much one. So from that perspective, we can create a heart connection with anyone we might meet, start to form a relationship, and then start to learn what we can from their different experiences. Start to expand your consciousness like a sphere or a bubble, getting larger and larger and larger in all directions. And as you expand out, search for any other awake, aware, conscious, moral beings that you might encounter. They may be on a craft, they may be on a planet, it doesn't matter. Come at this from a perspective of unconditional love. That same kind of love that your puppy dog has for you or that you have for your kids. Even though they may mess up, you still love them, you want them to succeed. Our galactic neighbors, the higher consciousness, higher dimensional galactic neighbors, have that same unconditional love for us. Know it and be willing to accept it. And if you encounter someone, after introducing yourself as a citizen ambassador from the planet Earth, or they may know it as Terra, invite them, if it's safe and convenient for them, to follow you back here to interact with the rest of the group. And they can follow your consciousness, so allow your consciousness to start flying back through the galaxies, to the Milky Way, to one of the spiral arms, to our solar system, our sun, the third planet out. Your consciousness knows the way. We're on the dark side of the planet now, and they can see the Nile River Valley, all the lights. You can see it as you fly back. Back to the site where we are. And as you approach the Earth, you may notice from a higher dimensional perspective, from your consciousness of unconditional love and oneness, that there are many craft around our planet, around our moon, and our nearby planets. They are here watching the great show. As we go through the higher dimensional energies of the galactic plane, as our consciousness is raised. Greet them and invite them to interact with us. Know that this is a holographic universe. You may be familiar with holographic pictures, and you may even know that if you cut the corner out of one of these holographic pictures, you still have the entire picture within that corner. You cut the corner out of that, you still have the entire picture. As the segment that you cut out gets smaller and smaller, you may start to lose a little resolution. But within that, every part of that picture is the entire picture. Now, turn this around, as above, so below. Contemplate that every part of the universe contains an aspect of you. Everyone you meet is holographically connected in this way. You are a part of them, and they are a part of you. The ancient Sufis had a saying, "Thinkest thyself a puny soul, when wrapped within thee is the entire universe." They knew, they understood, way back then. So now, come back into your body and remain in a very relaxed state, but gently come back to consciousness, open your eyes, and spend some time in an open-eyed meditation, just watching the sky. We're facing, in a circle, we're facing all directions. So we're watching all parts of the sky simultaneously. If anyone sees anything, point it out. We've got a bright moon tonight, so we can all see which way you're pointing. Watch for anything anomalous, both in the sky and in the field around us. We may see a satellite that makes a 90-degree turn, or a bright planet in an area where there shouldn't be a bright planet. If you see something like that, reach out in consciousness and try and connect with it. Say hi. Ask it to come closer so we can all see it. Thought project our visitors, your readiness and your willingness and your eagerness to meet and get acquainted. They don't necessarily need a craft to travel. They can use dimensional portals or other technologies, or just pure consciousness. And they can appear here. Most likely there are some here in the higher dimensions. We just may not be able to see them unless we raise our consciousness to these higher dimensions. And the best way to raise ourselves to fifth dimensional consciousness is to focus on unconditional love, whatever symbolizes that for you. Go into that feeling and project it. And our deep understanding of our fundamental oneness with all creation. That is the essence of the fifth dimension. Just like a fan, when it's not turned on, you can see the fan blades. When you plug it in or turn it on, as the fan goes faster and faster, it starts to vibrate or oscillate at a frequency beyond our ability to perceive it, and the fan blades seem to disappear. That is where most of the extraterrestrials, angelics, and spiritual realm reside, in those higher vibrations beyond our normal visual perception. But if we are in that state of bliss, that state of oneness, of unconditional love, we can see further into those dimensions. A number of years ago, we did an experiment in the Rosicrucian Temple in Denver. And I was in about the third group to conduct the experiment. We sat in the sanctum of the temple, two people at a time facing each other. And the object was to project unconditional love to the other person. And so I settled into that breathing meditation, that silence between the breaths. And I started contemplating our fundamental oneness, how we were both sparked by the same seed of consciousness from the same Creator. And I got into a pretty good state of bliss. And I didn't really notice anything myself other than that I was just blissed out. But when the experiment ended, some of the people in the audience commented that they saw a purple haze form around me, and an arm of that reached out and encircled the other person. And then the most unusual thing happened. They said I became semi-transparent. They could see through me. So all it takes is consciousness to raise our vibrations to a higher frequency, and we enter that same realm where they exist. And we can more easily see them and interact with them. That's our goal. So let's just spend 4 or 5 minutes looking around the sky around our circle. Quite often they will form a group just to the outside of our circle looking inward. They enjoy communing with us as we attempt to reach out, as we attempt to raise ourselves up to a higher level. They will often offer energetic assistance. And sometimes they're perceptible as subtle energy forms. Humanoid shapes. The ones I've seen have generally been like thousands of scintillating little blue-white firefly lights that form a humanoid shape. Not quite what some people would consider a ghostly appearance, but more of a sparkling, energetic humanoid shape. If you have glasses, it's often helpful to remove them, especially if your vision's not that bad. Glasses often have filters, ultraviolet filters, and stuff that will filter out some of the subtle energy. And also use a soft focus, not a hard stare, but a soft focus. And tune up that third eye psychic sight. Often you can see or perceive things that way. You may just sense a presence. You may feel emotions. You may sense smells. Often we'll get a scent of rose or sage, are very common. And those are signs that they're giving us that they're here with us. Unfortunately, it's a little hazy and a bright moon. It's difficult to see too many stars tonight. I do have a very bright star, alleged star, in the northeast sky. And I'm not quite sure what that one is. I don't see enough stars around it to really fix it. Our astroarchaeologist is in a deep state of higher consciousness. When she comes to, maybe she can help us identify what that is. Let's take a moment to review what we've done. We've examined some of the possibilities concerning our place in the universe and our origins. We've looked inward and started to examine our own belief systems and possible fears concerning other peoples from around the universe. We've learned some basic coping mechanisms to use when we encounter high strangeness. We've broadcast our readiness and our intentions for peaceful contact with our star cousins. So now all that's left to do is meet the neighbors and let the reunion begin. They are waiting for us to be ready, and they've got a grand family reunion planned because we are literally cousins, biological cousins, also know that they are very aware of the fear that's been programmed into us by the puppet masters of this planet. And they will, the first of our star cousins that we meet will be very much like us to avoid the fear, to allow us to get used to the concept. And then we'll start to meet those who are somewhat different. Natasha told me to prepare myself for when I get to visit her home planet. She said the Octurian men are between 12 and 18 feet tall. That would be a little intimidating if you didn't do some practice first. It's helpful in meditation to practice how you would behave in an encounter. We do this in our Ambassadors to the Universe training. And over the years, I had progressively more interesting encounters. I had conscious downloads, remote view encounters, craft that came in, flashed lights at us, we flashed back. Or actually, we flashed at them first and they responded. We've had craft shine a light beam down on us and scan us. One of my most interesting encounters was towards the end of a week out in the desert in the Baca near the Great Sand Dunes. And I was tired. We'd been up till 1 or 2 in the morning all week long. And I just didn't have the energy for the full remote view, go out, look around, try and find somebody, invite them back, the whole protocol. I just didn't have energy for it. I also know that they have a sense of humor. They've demonstrated that over and over again. And so I just laid back in the chair and went into that silence between the breaths and just mentally said, come on down and play. And as an afterthought, I added, or beam me up. Instantly, like waking up from anesthesia where there's no sense of time passage, I was on what appeared to be the deck of a craft. And I was surrounded by 10 or 12 of these little 3-foot tall crustacean guys. The head looked a lot like a crawdad, but they had skinny neck, skinny arms, skinny legs, skinny body. You could hear the gentle clack, clack, clack of their pincers as they moved, as they worked around the room. And their vocalization was a throat clicking, very much like the throat clicking of the Bushmen of the Kalahari, which makes me wonder where they got that very unique language. As I looked around and they're looking at me, you could feel the curiosity, the concern, the compassion was just palpable. And my first thought was, I must be terribly intimidating to them because I'm just towering over them. I'm twice as tall as they are. And so I did like you do with kids. I sat down on the floor. I got down to their level to show that I was not a threat to them, that I wanted to meet them halfway. Now you'd think that being surrounded by crustacean beings with pincher hands would be very intimidating, but I just totally knew that I was safe. No doubt in my mind. Several of them walked over to me. One of them was very gently feeling my arm, very much like when a blind person feels your face to get an idea what you look like. Very careful, very gentle. And I could feel the touch, which I later learned means that this was an out-of-body experience, that my psychic body was there. It wasn't just a remote view where my consciousness only was there. And about that time, somebody back in the group in the Baca spotted a big meteor, and they shouted for everybody to look, and it snapped me back into my body so violently it hurt. It just physically hurt. And I go, no, I want to go back. But I couldn't make the connection again. It had snapped it so hard that I couldn't reconnect. The whole encounter lasted maybe 15, 20 seconds. But I think in a way it was like a final exam to see how I would react to the high strangeness, to the significantly different beings. And I think I did okay. But it takes some mental preparation, some practice. Did anyone in the group encounter anything during the meditation, during your time out in the cosmos? Did you encounter anyone?
I went on board my ship.
Well, tell us about it.
I just said, okay, I'm going to go aboard my ship. On the count of three, one, two, three, boom, I'm there. And I said, okay, I don't want to leave it. So I'm going to stay within it at the same time that I'm here. So I'm in the ship and on Earth at the same time.
So you were bilocated?
Yeah, it's like occupying two vessels at the same time.
Were there any other beings on the craft?
I don't know any other details at this moment right now, other than being home on my ship.
Your ship.
My ship. Where I'm from.
Yeah, I seen a star over there, just over the horizon. It just went down. But early on, when you first started talking about what we can expect to, during the meditation, I seen like an energy right up and down at an angle right here, and it was fairly close to the group. It was real tall. And then a little bit later when you mentioned about we might not see anything in the physical or possibly, and I seen an orb come across here real fast, right in front of the sand.
Saw that visually?
Yes.
Wow. Well, you start to see the higher dimensions as you get yourself into that state of consciousness. Normally, those will show up on a camera because the cameras have a little wider spectrum than our eyes. So they see a little further into the infrared, a little further into the ultraviolet. And in fact, when they first came out with the first digital cameras, they had quite a wide spectrum, and people were getting all of these funny shapes and stuff in their photos and complaining, there's something wrong with my camera. No, there's nothing wrong with the camera. It's just showing you a wider perspective, a wider view of reality. It's like the bees can see more into the ultraviolet, I think it is, and they can tell, the flowers look different. They can tell which ones have pollen and stuff in that part of the spectrum beyond what we can see.
This one star went down, okay, there it is. That went down. I was watching two of them, and the one all of a sudden disappeared. I didn't see it anymore, and the other one started going down all of a sudden. I'm not sure why that is.
Well, that is to the west, so things will be setting in the west.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's why.
And they actually, if you find a point of reference and mark it, they move faster than you think.
Yeah.
They'll move about 15 degrees per hour. Yeah, it's unfortunate on the later cameras, the manufacturers have put filters in them to eliminate all of those blotches and ghostly forms that were showing up so that the people's picture looks like what they saw with their eyes.
Okay. Yeah, if we could have that camera when I was sitting there, that was amazing. We may not see something physical tonight. Then that's when the orb went across.
Did you bring a camera?
Yes.
Just take a few pictures around. Okay. Quite often, things will show up.
When I was in Greer's backyard, I turned around with my digital and snapped one, and there were several orbs in it. But I was seeing them with my eyes. Several nights.